President Trump says he sent a letter to Iran hoping to negotiate a deal to stop their nuclear ambitions.
But we have a situation with Iran that something's going to happen very soon, very, very soon.
So, is Iran ready to talk?
You know, this is a really interesting time, moment for the Iranian leaders to make a fundamental decision. What's in the best interest of the Iranian people, the national interest of Iran? And vast majority of Iranians, I have no doubt, will tell you it's a good time to make compromises across the board.
Today is Friday, March 7th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman.
Hopefully we can have a peace deal. You know, I'm not speaking out of strength or weakness. I'm just saying I'd rather see a peace deal than the other. But the other will solve the problem.
U.S. President Donald Trump says he sent a letter to Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei offering to start negotiations on ending Iran's nuclear weapons program.
We're down to the final moments. We're at final moments. You can't let them have a nuclear weapon.
According to Iran's mission to the United Nations in New York, they have not yet received the letter, at least as of Friday afternoon. So let's talk more about this from a big picture perspective. Joining us now is Alex Vatanka, a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute. He specializes in Middle Eastern regional security affairs with a particular focus on Iran. So thank you very much for coming on and hopefully helping walk us through what's going on.
I'll do my best.
So let's go big picture. President Trump says he sent a letter to Ali Khamenei saying he wants to negotiate a deal after pulling out of the deal that we had in the first administration. Where are we relationship-wise with Iran?
Look, in terms of where we are, you know, one way of looking at it is to say we're in the same place we've been literally for the last many years, certainly going back to 2018 when the first Trump administration imposed the maximum pressure campaign on Iran, because, you know, the U.S. is still out of the nuclear deal that was signed in 2015. On paper, the United States is still committed to the maximum pressure campaign. In fact, the president, in his few weeks in office, has reiterated that that's what he intends to do, to squeeze the Iranian economy. Other senior Trump officials are saying they will, you know, do what they can to destabilize Iran's economy. So that has not really changed, that the sort of stick part of the equation. In terms of the carrot, if I could call it a carrot, a couple of things stand out. Number one is Trump administration 2.0 is very different from the first Trump administration in the sense that, you know, President Trump so far, if you listen to him, the one thing that he keeps going back to in terms of he must have it is that Iran does not weaponize its nuclear program. That's his red line. That's very different than the sort of demands we heard from Trump administration in the first term. You know, we all remember Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's 12-point demands, which wasn't just about Iran's nuclear program. It was about its missiles, its proxy network in the region, its human rights record, much more extensive, which essentially amounted to United States back then asking Iran to capitulate. That's not the case today. It's much more of a narrow focus. It's on the weaponization part of Iran's nuclear program. And if you look at it that way, on paper, there is a convergence here because the Iranians, certainly Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader who President Trump sent this letter to, has come out, repeatedly said weaponization of Iran's nuclear program is anti-Islamic. It's against the religion that he, you know, claims to represent. And therefore, you could see that, you know, today, early 2025, if they stick to that issue, weaponization or not, there is grounds for agreement. We just have to wait and see if that is genuinely what President Trump is interested in, or whether once the talks start going, he'll move the goalpost, if you will, and he'll add more demands. Because I think that's fundamentally the fear of Ali Khamenei. My bet is if Ali Khamenei knew for sure that President Trump really just has one thing on his mind, is that Iran doesn't weaponize, I think a serious conversation can be had, because Khamenei is willing to give that to President Trump. But Khamenei does not have the trust whether that will remain the case or whether the American president will just play games with him, change his mind, and add more to the list of demands from him, which from Khamenei's point of view, is the beginning of a slippery slope that will bring the Islamic Republic, his beloved system, the one that he has ruled over since 1989, to an end.
They've started making more almost weapons grade material. Is that a negotiating tactic? I mean, like they had my numbers might be a little off. I think it was like 400 pounds, and now they have 600 pounds. But there was a rapid increase in near weapons grade uranium since Trump won the election.
Right. No, I mean, Scott, the numbers are constantly changing. What is, in terms of the important thing to take away, is that the Iranians are enriching at a higher level. They're saying they will expand if they have to. And I think, to your point, it's about leverage. It's about leverage. In fact, I would go as far as saying everything US and Iran do vis-a-vis each other at this point, it's about leverage. I don't think we're at a point where we can talk about, you know, Iran and US going to war. I certainly don't think Washington or Tehran interested in that scenario. But when you're seeing Trump administration in its first few weeks in office reintroducing the idea of implementing maximum pressure campaign, which, by the way, never went away under the Biden administration, but President Trump has said he will forcefully implement it, or the sort of flying over Middle East with the B-52s, or the notion, as was reported by some in the media, that, you know, U.S. will maybe take Iranian oil tankers by force. All of these things are essentially aimed at one thing, to get the attention of the other side, in the hope that once they sit down at that table and negotiate, that they go in with the best, strongest hand that they have. It's true for both sides. So what US does is aim to get Iran's attention, and all the talk on the Iranian side about we're going to enrich more and all the rest of it is designed to create leverage for themselves. End of the day, I think most analysts will tell you, if Iran really wanted to weaponize, they've had the technical capacity to do it for some time. They're not doing it because the cost-benefit analysis, from their perspective, still is one where Iran is better off being where it is right now, using the nuclear program as a leverage in terms of its future of relations with the United States and the rest of the world, as opposed to, you know, going all out and weaponizing, becoming a North Korea-style country, but then paying the consequences in the sense of isolating the place more so than it already is.
Well, and given what they've been through with Hamas and Hezbollah, this would really kind of be a good deal for them, right? They put this to bed, everything cools down on them for a while, and they can rebuild.
Look, if you were Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader, or one of the senior generals in the Revolutionary Guards in Tehran that essentially are running Iran's regional agenda, you would say this would be a good deal, because this gives him a way out, gives Iran the option to actually look and turn to their own people, who are desperately, desperately asking for the Khamenei regime to focus on events in Iran, to look at getting the sanctions lifted, to improve living standards. I mean, as we're speaking here today, Scott, we're a few weeks away from the Persian New Year. And if you listen to what's happening in Iran, people are just desperate, because this is a time of the year you're supposed to go out there and, you know, buy gifts for your family members, fix up your house, go on holiday, do the good things people do in a festive season. And yet what we're hearing is that people are so broke, there is no money. And that has created a sort of an anger in society. And obviously that anger is immediately linked to the nature of the regime's foreign policy pursuits. The nuclear issue is one, what they're doing in the region is another. So if they did want to sort of take this deal, if there is a deal to be had, this offer of talking to President Trump, they're doing themselves a major favor. But I'm speaking as someone who's not looking at this ideologically. But if you're an Islamist ideologue in Tehran, if you believe that the economy is nothing compared to what the sort of sacred mission of fighting Israel or United States in the Middle East, then they're not going to necessarily take my advice or take a deal with the Trump administration, but look for ways to, you know, perhaps go back to Syria. I mean, again, we're talking at a day where there are new clashes in Syria, question marks if Iran is involved. If Iran is involved, wants to come back to Syria, you know, it tells us that they haven't really learned any new lessons from the fall of the Assad regime, that they're still pretty much determined to stay the course, axis of resistance, fight the Americans, fight Israel, and sacrifice Iran's economy in the process. But again, it's too early. I don't know where Iran is going, but to your point, where in terms of Iran's regional agenda, for sure, no doubt, they are shaken to the core because Assad wasn't supposed to fall the way he did. Hezbollah and Hamas were certainly not supposed to be decimated by Israel and the U.S. in the course of months last year the way they were. So, you know, this is a really interesting time, moment for the Iranian leaders to again, make a fundamental decision. What's in the best interest of the Iranian people, the national interest of Iran? And vast majority of Iranians, I have no doubt, will tell you it's a good time to make compromises across the board. But, you know, the leaders, obviously, Iran is not a democracy. Ayatollah Khamenei doesn't depend on anyone's votes to be a supreme leader. We have to wait and see what he decides.
Hmm. Alex, fascinating, as always. We'll keep an eye on it, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Pleasure speaking to you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Alex Fatenka, the senior fellow at the Middle East Institute. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America. Thank you so much for being with us on behalf of everyone at VOA, both here in Washington and in all of our bureaus around the world. For news 24/7, check out our website, voanews.com. You can also download our app from Apple and Google. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.